Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
Hey, it's Rick and Sherry from the Life in a Kilt podcast.
If you are a kilt wearer, a kilt lover, or simply like to gawk, come hang out with us every week on Life in a Kilt podcast.
We discuss kilt life, regular life, and everything in between and underneath.
We've got humor, interviews, sketch comedy, pop culture, beer reviews, even indie music. And we discuss it each week in a way that only we can.
Well, only the way I can.
Oh, hush. I discuss it so much better than
whatever.
You.
Anyway, discover the joys of kilt life without ever leaving the comfort of your own headphones. Kilts aren't required, but if you've got one, feel free to buckle up.
That's the Life in a Kilt podcast with Rick and Sherry every week on the ESO Network.
And welcome again to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. I am your host, The Monster, back to give you a bit of a different podcast that I've done in the past. This is not a sci-fi news podcast. This is not my Versus or my rewatch series or even for my library podcast on page 49. The podcast that I'm planning to do is, if you know, on past episodes, I've always mentioned in remembrance of someone who has passed. And I think I started this when Harve Bennett passed, when I started to do my podcast on a regular basis. Let me not necessarily stop doing that, but I still want to talk about someone who's still with us, and that's Stan Lee. So I would like to celebrate Stan Lee. Back in 2011, I took my wife to see Stan Lee at MegaCon, and I recorded the entire event as an audio clip. So it's about 40 minutes long, but I wanted you to hear, if you've never gotten the chance to hear Stan Lee, what it's like to be in his presence. And I was in awe of him, and even though it was just more of a question and answer situation, he's been around in our lives for such a long time. And considering what has been happening since the events of Charlottesville, on my birthday, on August 15th, someone had posted a picture of an old Stan soapbox, and basically Stan's soapbox was in the back of the magazine, in which it's his little editorial space, which he would comment on things that he had to say or respond to one of the fans who wrote in. So this is what it says in the soapbox. And I'm not going to do a Stan Lee voice. I can't do that kind of imitation. But this is what it says. Let's lay it right on the line. Bigotry and racism are among the deadliest social ills plaguing the world today. But unlike a team of costume supervillains, they can't be halted with a punch in the snoot or a zap from a ray gun. The only way to destroy them is to expose them, to reveal them for the insidious evils they really are. The bigot is an unreasoning hater, one who hates blindly, fanatically, indiscriminately. If his hang-ups is black men, he hates all black men. If a redhead once offended him, he hates all redheads. If some foreigner beat him to a job, he's down for all foreigners. He hates people he has never seen, people he's never known, with equal intensity and with equal venom. Now, we're not trying to say that it's unreasonable for one human being to bug another. But although anyone has the right to dislike another individual, it's totally irrational, patently insane to condemn an entire race, to despise an entire nation, to vilify an entire religion. Sooner or later, we must learn to judge each other on our own merits. Sooner or later, if man is ever to be worthy of his destiny, we must fill our hearts with tolerance. For then, and only then, will we be truly worthy of the concept that man was created in the image of God, and God will call us all his children. Considering how long ago, and I'm assuming this is back in either the 60s or 70s, when Stan was still the editor-in-chief, it is still applicable to what has happened today for the events of Charlottesville and whatever events will happen in the future, within my lifetime and within my children's lifetime, and so on and so on. I want to believe that we'll get past this one day, but the environment right now is very toxic. So I will play something for you that makes you feel happy to be in that moment of joy that I did with my wife at MegaCon watching Stan Lee. And again, it's nothing more than just questions and answers that he took from the audience, but it was enjoyable. And life really is about being in those moments. That's what I want to do. I want to celebrate Stan Lee by allowing you to listen to Stan Lee himself. So again, it's a different podcast. I'm not remembering, sort of. He is still with us. But the fact that he has such an influence on the comics today is amazing and astounding. And I'm not going to get into the details about who really created certain superheroes. Stan Lee is a very influential person. Let history decide where that lies as far as the heroes that he helped create. So this is not that kind of podcast. I'm going to leave it right here. And as I'm going to sign out right now, remember, you can always email me at monstersci-fi show@gmail.com. You can find me on the various social networks. So again, thank you very much for listening to me and to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. Remember, it's sci-fi from a certain point of view. And here's Stan Lee.
Thank you, culture lovers. I have no idea why I'm here. There we go. This is going to be a Q&A. People are going to get to ask you questions.
Yeah, but we will.
What if I don't know the answer?
You look at me and I answer it for you.
Well, I'll phone it like I always do.
You phone it in like you always do. Sure.
And now I got one problem. I know when you look at me, I seem like the most perfect human being you've ever seen. However, I don't hear as well as I used to. So I won't hear your questions, so Jimmy will repeat them to me. So it'll take a second, bear with us. In fact, if I can't hear Jimmy, we're in big trouble. But, all right, take it away.
Okay, so what we're going to do is, you guys, I hope you came on with questions, and I want you to put your hands up. By pointing, I'll point out some weird characteristics of you so the girl can run over with the microphone. And when the microphone gets to you, speak as clear as you can. And Stan will try his best.
Those are more instructions than when they launched the space shuttle. Are you making notes?
It usually works, though. So I'm going to start with questions. Let's go right. I'm going to go right to the front, right in the corner here. Stand up, and here she comes.
Thank you. First off, Stan, thank you so much for coming to Florida, coming to MegaCon.
Yeah! You're very welcome. Thanks. Finally found a place to take me away from that freezing weather in Los Angeles.
My question for you is, what is your writing thought process like Do you have a set time where you sit down and you write, or do you just wait for the big idea to come and then just start jotting it down?
A few words. What do I do in my spare time? We don't want to talk about that. What's your process in the day? Do you get up in the morning tomorrow?
I better get up in the morning. I hope I get up in the morning.
But what's the process when you work?
I have a new company called Powell Entertainment, POW. Now, you probably all have suspected that the word POW stands for Purveyors of Wonder. And we work on movies, television, video games, anything that publishing. So I go to the office in the morning. I work with a guy named Gil Champion, who's my partner, my business partner. And he tells me what to worry about. He'll say, Stan, I need an outline for this. They're waiting at the studio, or when you edit the script, or come on, we got to go to a meeting at the agency. So I never know what the day will bring, but it's really a lot of fun working on a lot of different projects. And we have a little involvement with the Walt Disney Company. They bought a small piece of our company, so a couple times a week I have to run over to Disney in Burbank. We're in Beverly Hills. To go to Burbank, you got to drive for 3/4 of an hour over the hill. And I guess I'm not as influential as I thought. I'm trying to get Disney to move their whole operation to Beverly Hills to make it easy for me, but you can't reason with some people.
My question is, would you receive suggestions on what a new supervillain or superhero might be?
What a new superhero or supervillain might be?
Would you be open to suggestions?
Oh, open to suggestions. Yeah. See, I have this strange hearing thing. I can hear what people say, but I can't make out the words sometimes, especially through the mics. If you talk to me through the mic, I wouldn't know what you were saying. It's strange. Anyway, no, we don't need any superheroes or supervillains. We got them coming out of the drawers in the desks and coming out of the file cabinets and out of my pocket.
Since
we don't have enough hours in the day to do the superheroes and supervillains we want to do.
Since you had the yellow shirt on, I thought you might consider Banana Man as your next superhero or villain.
Banana Man! Of a different color. I don't know that we have anything as good as Banana Man. Hey, but wouldn't it be funny, years from now, we forget that I was here and this gentleman made that suggestion and we come up with a Banana Man and suddenly a team of lawyers and techs. I gotta make sure I never do a Banana Man unless I contact you first, of course. Now, what is your superpower? People slip on your peel or something? Does it give you a great feeling of power to say, there,
that way? Especially being next to you, I'm almost like, I have radiation. I'm going to go out and become some, have some superpower.
And then another lawyer on a kind of irradiated game.
Out of all the characters that you've created over the years that, you know, you have some type of sense of ownership of, as things evolve, times evolve, and artists have changed or writers have changed, and they've taken your characters in different directions, what's the one time somebody did something to one of your characters that you just went, man, I wish they never did that?
I heard a boy of characters I created, and I couldn't get the rest.
What would you say, you wish they never did that, or wish they did?
Yeah, that you just couldn't, you wish they never went in that direction.
You
know, you wish that they never went in that direction.
Okay, so out of all the characters you've created over the years, where other people did them after you, is there any character you wish that they didn't go in that direction?
Oh. Well, it was probably a good thing that he did it, but I was a little sorry that Conway killed Gwen Stacy in Spider-Man. And other than that, no, I think the guys have been doing a wonderful job. And a lot better probably than I would. I mean, I never would have thought of Wolverine, and that's one of the great characters that we have. And Deadpool is really good. So it's probably a good thing I'm out of there. Who knows what they'll come up with next?
Okay, we're going to go to the gentleman right there.
I'm not really out of there.
Dan. I've come over from the UK to meet you, kind of childhood hero of mine. By the way, there is a banana man already in the UK, so sorry about that.
You're kidding. Who publishes it?
D.C. Thompson.
Scott, no wonder our books aren't selling as well as all that competition.
Anyway, I just wanted to know, you know, as I'm meeting my childhood hero, did you have a childhood hero you ever got to meet, or is there someone you'd still like to meet?
Well, my childhood hero when I was a kid was an actor called Errol Flynn. To me, he was just the greatest. I mean, he was Captain Blood, and he was the mayor of Dodge City, and he was Robin Hood, and, oh, man, I mean, and he was, he always had that cheerful little smile, and he could beat up anybody. When I was about 12 years old, I'd come out of a theater after I had seen one of his movies, and I had an imaginary sword at my side, and I was looking for any little girl that some bully might be picking on so I could come to her rescue. I tell you, I was so influenced by Errol Flynn. Now I'm just influenced by all the artists and writers in the business because they're all geniuses. I think the books have gotten so beautifully illustrated. And we have writers now in the comic books who are television writers and screenplay writers and novelists. And they wouldn't have looked at comics years ago. Now they all want to write for them. It's a whole new thing, and I ventured far afield from the question, and I'm sorry.
Hi, big fan of your work. Just a quick question. What of all the films that you've appeared in that is your favorite that you've worked on?
One more time.
Of all the films that you've appeared in over the years, what's your favorite one you've been in?
I got a kick out of the Fantastic Four where they wouldn't let me into the wedding. and it wasn't funny, but I liked the Spider-Man where I spoke to Peter Parker and I said to him something about sometimes one man can make a difference. And then the director as I left, he said, I want you to add, enough said. And I thought that was great that I said, enough said. Now, they are such perfectionists when they do these movies. Would you believe a month later, he called me back to the studio to do a little voice recording. I said, what's the matter? He said, when you said enough said, there was just a little something in your voice. I'd like you to say it again. Now, all I had said was enough said. So in the studio, I said, enough said. And she said, that's better. I never understood why one was different than the other, but like I say, they're perfectionists. That went over like a lead balloon, didn't it? Yeah, one more.
I'm going to say, right over there, the hand up, right there. Yeah.
Hey, we're on the screen, look. They're having all the fun. All I can see are empty faces.
What was your involvement with the Spider-Man musical and what's your opinion of it?
I was in New York one day and I went to see the rehearsal. And I got to tell you, the rehearsal, I only saw about 20 minutes of it. It looked wonderful. There were no accidents when I was there. Everybody seemed and it looked good and it sounded good, so I have not seen the whole show. I know there were one or two critics who panned it, maybe one or 200 who panned it, and they are having some difficulties. But you know, the good guys always win. I have a feeling sooner or later, it may be 10 years from now, but it'll turn out okay.
Walk up, fly up.
Silver Surfer?
Either one is fine. I actually have a Silver Surfer question. The Silver Surfer is Marvel's most noble, poignant, and some would say tragic characters. When you originally created him, did you have in mind that he would become a hero like this, or was he simply the herald of Galactus who took on a life of his own?
Tell you what happened with the Silver Surfer. I had told Jack Kirby I wanted a story, I wanted a feature, a villain called Galactus who destroys planets, and how he's coming to destroy the Earth, and I gave him a lot of details about the story. I never gave him a script, I would just tell him what I wanted in the story, and I let him do it his own way. So he brought in the 20 pages or whatever it was of the Fantastic Four story to me, and I looked at it, and I see some nutty-looking naked guy on a skate on a surfboard floating around in the sky. And I said, who's this? And he said, well, I figure anybody as powerful as Galactus ought to have a herald who goes ahead of him and finds the planets for him to destroy. I think Jack just liked drawing a guy on a flying surfboard, you know. I don't blame him. So, Somehow, and Jack just meant him as a throwaway character, just somebody who'd fly off and then call Galactus and say, attack the Earth, and we probably wouldn't see him anymore. But the way Jack drew him, I'm sorry, the way Jack drew you, you looked so noble and self-sacrificing, and there was something so dramatic looking about the Surfer that I said to Jack, I want to use him more. Let's get an origin for him. How did he happen to be the Silver Surfer? And on and on. And then I planned how we would use him. And I wanted to make him a character who would always be wondering why we had so many problems on Earth, because we have such a wonderful planet that we live on. It gives us food, change of season. We have everything as paradise. And yet we're always having wars and poverty and crime. And the Silver Surfer figured, we're mad. Why are we this way? And I thought I could get a lot of my corny philosophical feelings into this trip with the Silver Surfer. And that's probably the longest answer you want to hear. But that's what happened, and that's how the Silver Surfer came to be. That's how you came to be, and you've done a great job. You see, you can't just look at the type pages of a script and see if a guy can write well. And no editor has time to read a whole script that you might have done. But an art director can look at a page of artwork, and in 2 seconds, he can tell whether you're a really great artist, the type that he wants, or you're not. So that's why I say draw good. If you could draw as well as some of the really good artists working in comics, and you show an art director or an editor your artwork, he might very well give you something to do, because they're always looking for the new great artists. And there are no secrets, there's no inside information I can give you. Just pick an artist that you think is the best in the business and see if you can do some artwork that's as good or better than his. And then you have a fighting chance. Did I say that right? Because you're an artist and he's a good one. Thank you, and you are indeed the man. So the best you can hope for is something that's similar to something else, but it's done in a different way or a better way. And everybody is looking for, it's funny with the movie studios and the television networks, everybody is looking for the next different thing, but they're afraid to buy the next different thing, because if it's different, it may not work, and they don't want to get blamed if it doesn't work. And that's why so many things come out that are similar to other things, but just told from a little different point of view. And if you want to hear any more, we'll be giving a class in comics and in movies and television someday in the future. You can all enroll.
Thank you so much.
Is there any superhero that you want to have his or her own movie that doesn't already have one?
Oh, yeah, sure, a lot of them. I'd like the Black Panther to have his own movie. I'd like Doctor Strange to have his own movie. But the thing is, believe me, they will. Because they're developing every one of the Marvel characters that have any chance of being, you know, every one that we've featured. There's even a guy working on Ant-Man right now. Stay with us, more to come. I picked somebody, he said, waving to someone. He said, that's really cool. He was like, he's drowning. That's the way to get attention.
So, I have a question, obviously. Why is there such a disconnect between the Bruce Banner character and the Hulk in the movies, whereas the Hulk in the movies is really dumb, but in the comic books, he's actually a semi-intelligent character? Like,
I think I got it. Why is there a difference between the Hulk in the movies and in the comic books? In the movies, he's really dumb.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I can hear clearly. I want that man around real quick. It's something that I have thought about a lot myself. There are two things that would change drastically from the movies to the from the comic books to the movies. One was the Hulk. As you may remember, in the comic book series, and even the way Kirby and I first did the Hulk, he was about 7 feet tall, I'd say, and very strong. And in the movies, they made him about 20 feet or 25 feet tall, and even stronger and dumber. No, he wasn't really dumb. I don't know what he was in the movie. I can't figure it out. Thank you. See why I keep this man up here? Anyway, another thing that I think that they changed him the way they did. When they do big movies today, superhero-type movies, they know the audience loves special effects, and the audience wants to see things that are bigger than life on the screen. So I think they felt if they do him the way Lou Ferrigno played him in the television series, just as a big guy, it wouldn't be enough for the superhero fans that would go to the movies, so they made him very big and a million times stronger than he was in the television series, or even than Jack and I had written. So the same with the Sandman. If you saw the Spider-Man movie with the Sandman, when we had done the Sandman, he was a guy of normal size, except he could turn his body into sand or he could make it rock hard, and that was enough to make him a real tough villain for Spidey to fight. But again, they probably felt that wouldn't be enough of a special effect for the audience. So as you may remember, they made him as tall as they wanted him to be. He could have been the size of a skyscraper blowing through the city. And so they tend to exaggerate so many things, and the reason they do it is they feel the audience expects to be overwhelmed by the things that they see on the screen. So they want everything to be bigger or more colorful than life. And that's it. That was another dull answer. And why am I getting so dull all of a sudden? I'm getting too practical. I don't like being practical.
There's a guy I know in the audience who's like the biggest fan of yours. He's the huge fan.
No, no, I told you I'm the biggest fan.
The second biggest fan. And he does a pretty good imitation. Would you like to see it?
Yeah.
Elsie, come on up. Come on up, buddy.
Any questions that you want me to answer, because I'll make up a whole load of crap, because I'm not Stan Lee.
I want to thank you, Stan. By the way, I got to ink a story that you wrote featuring you and the Thing.
Chance to read comics today. All I do is thumb through them. They send me the new ones at Marvel, and there are so many of them. So I just look to see what the artwork looks like. So to me, the main difference is in the artwork. It's the fact that when we drew them, when Kirby and Ditko and Romita and Buscema and Gil Kane and all the guys, Gene Colan did them, they looked like comic book artwork. But today, with the computer coloring, they begin to look like illustrations, like paintings. It has a different look. Some of the books, I guess, maybe are still comic booky, but most of them look like a step above comics. They're like more serious. So I guess that's a good thing now that they've got the computers to make all that great coloring. But other than that, I don't know. As far as the stories go, I don't read them, so you would have to tell me what the difference is.
They're not Stan Lee, so they're not as good. That's all there is to it.
He says right here, and the person right here.
Hello, Generalissimo. My question is, if back when you were creating comic books, back when you were writing, the Comics Code Authority was pretty much irrelevant as it is today, were there any storylines that you would have done that you wouldn't have gotten?
All I can make out is, were there any something?
Okay, you were writing, you went back and you had a comic book.
Yeah.
No.
I never cared about the comic code. Our books were never that sexy or violent. And I'll tell you a funny story about the code, though. Although you may not think it's funny, and then I'll really die on stage. Well, let me try it and see what happens. I was working on a Western called Kid Cold Outlaw. A guy named Jack Heller drew it. And typical Western stories in those days. There was one panel on one page where Kid Colt was holding a gun, and he shot a gun, a little six-shooter. And you didn't see anything. It was a close-up of his hand and the gun. Now, I want you to picture this. His hand is like that, holding the trigger. There's a big puff of smoke coming out of the gun barrel, and a straight horizontal line indicating the trajectory of the bullet. That's all that the drawing showed. The hand pulling the trigger, the puff of smoke, and the trajectory of the bullet. That was the panel. So we sent the whole book to the Comic Code, and they sent back a note. That panel had to be redrawn. It was objectionable. So I figured, I'm dreaming. It's a joke. And I called them, and I said, how could that panel be objectionable? You don't see anybody getting hit by the bullet. It's nothing. It's just a puff of smoke and the trajectory of the bullet. And this is the answer that they gave me, and I swear they were deadly serious. The puff of smoke is too big. You'll be happy to know that for the sake of our readers, I made that puff of smoke a little smaller. And they approved it. Instead of the puff of smoke being like that, it was like that. Perfectly fine. That was the comic code we were dealing with. Don't draw any puffs of smoke in your strips.
Hi, Mr. Lee. Nice to see you. My question is, did you always want to get into comic books, or what did you want to do before comic books?
Did I always want to do comics? I wanted to be everything. When I was a kid and I saw Errol Flynn on the screen, I wanted to be an actor. When I would hear commercials on the radio, I wanted to be in advertising. I always wanted to write commercials. When I read books, I wanted to be a novelist or writer. I never knew about comics. When I was a kid, I read regular books. So I wanted to be a writer, an actor, an advertising man. Then I saw a movie about a lawyer. And he was making a speech in front of the jury, and he was so impassioned, and the girl, his girlfriend, was listening to him, and she was so impressed and so obviously in love with him because of the passion of his words, I decided I wanted to be a lawyer. Whatever I saw that looked good to me, I wanted to be. The only thing I never thought of being or doing was being in the comic book business. It never occurred to me. And the only comics they had then were really reprints of newspaper comic strips. Like you could buy a comic book of Popeye or Dick Tracy, but there were no superhero comics when I was a kid. So naturally, as fate would have it, the one thing I ended up doing was the one thing I never wanted to do or even thought about doing. So you never know.
Thank you.
Hi, you mentioned several artists earlier. So how would you describe, say, a Kirby, Ditko, Romita style, and just those three, how would you describe their art?
I heard that. Okay. Now, I figured out what's wrong with my hearing. Okay. You see, that microphone didn't muffle, the words came clear. Most people who talk in the mics, for some reason, the microphone, that was very clear, and I want you and all my audiences. Okay, now I've got the question. Oh, how did I decide what artist to use? Was that it? Oh, how would I describe their style? You mean to you? To the audience? What if they don't want to hear it? What if you are the only guy who wants to hear it, and they got to sit and listen to it because you asked?
I want to hear this, please.
Right, anyway, the way I would describe their style, Jack Kirby was, you know, I gave him that nickname, Jack King Kirby. I was giving everybody nicknames, Genial Gene Colan and Darlin' Dick Ayers and on, Sturdy Steve Ditko, and I wanted to find something that go with Jack, and I thought Jack King Kirby sounded good. I called myself Smiling Stan, because once in a while I smiled. But anyway, that is not your question. Jack Kirby was the guy that I hoped everybody would draw a little bit like, in the sense of the way he could put more drama in a story with his drawings than anybody else. He could just have a guy's face talking, and it looked interesting and dramatic. And his action was sensational, and his imagination. If I would ask him to draw some kind of a thing, when he drew it, it was much more exciting and fantastic than I had even imagined it would be. So to me, Kirby embodied everything you could want in a good comic book artist. And thank you, Kirby. Steve Ditko had a totally different style. It was simpler. It was not impressive looking at first glance, but it told the story beautifully, clearly, beautifully, and he put a lot of drama in and gave every panel a lot of thought, and people really loved his Spider-Man and his Doctor Strange. John Buscema, to me, was the Michelangelo of the artist. He was the greatest artist. I mean, he could draw a body perfectly. He just was a great illustrator. John Romita was beautiful to work with, and he could imitate anybody's style. When Ditko left Spider-Man, Romita took over, and the first few issues looked as if Ditko had drawn them. But then Romita got into his own style, which was beautiful. He used to draw romance strips, so I loved the way he drew girls. I can go on and on. We had 100 artists, but I think that gives you an idea. Oh, wait till you see my cameo in Captain America.
How do you feel about the new layout of the costume for the Amazing Spider-Man movie?
About the You know, believe it or not, I don't even know about it. I haven't seen it. I know there is a new look, but I have not seen it.
Okay. Let's see, right behind you.
When I did my cameo, Spider-Man wasn't in the scene with me, so I didn't see it.
You know, I want to tell a quick story. I was at a party once, and you were sitting there on the couch, like all like relaxed with Lucy Lawless. Lucy, Zena, she played Zena on Lucy Lawless, the actress.
Oh, Lucy Lawless, yeah.
And I've always been jealous, you know, of Stan. Stan is the man. But he was, like, hanging out with Lucy Lawless on the couch, like, and it was just, like, the greatest thing I've ever seen. And I wanted to take a photo, but I figured if I did, it would be on the front page of every newspaper. So I did, out of respect. But you're my hero for that, because, I mean, just absolutely.
She was a very nice gal. She was married, so all we were doing was hanging out. And I was married too, so we were really just hanging out.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Did you expect Spider-Man and all your characters to be as big as they are now, like when you first wrote them?
Oh, no. Nobody expected it. I and the artists and the writers, we just hoped that the books would sell month after month so we would keep our jobs and be able to pay the rent. It never occurred to us that someday we'd have these characters on the screen and they'd be the biggest goddamn characters in the world. And we'd be invited to bore you people in sessions like this. We would have laughed. It would have been a fairy tale if anybody had told us what would happen years later.
Okay, I'm going to go back a little bit. The guy standing there with that weird shirt.
Jeez, not only don't I hear well, I don't see well. I can't see
anything.
I was interested to see what crossover with another company are you most interested in?
What do you mean by crossover?
Like, you know, I know you guys dabbled with DC characters sometime. I know you've done Army of Darkness. What personally would you like to see as a crossover with your characters and another company's characters?
Well, again, I'm not that familiar with what other companies are doing now because I don't really read the comics anymore. The only company I know of, and I don't read their books, but I know their characters, and that's DC. So it would have to be a DC. Oh, wait a minute. And then there's... Boom! I'm doing a few new books with Boom, so I know about Boom. I don't know if you've seen them, but they're out now. And I'm doing another new thing called Stan Lee's Comics with, of all people, the outfit Archie, that does Archie, Betty and Veronica. But they wanted to do a superhero thing, and they called me, and I couldn't resist the chance to make up some new superheroes. So we have something called the Mighty Seven. And it's the world's first reality comic book because I'm a character in it and the Archie offices are featured in it, and it's about the comic book business and the superheroes. So I don't know, it'll either be the biggest success or the biggest bomb that ever came out, but I think it's kind of cute. You'll be seeing it in a while, so I hope you give it a look.
Which probably didn't answer this question. Don't worry about it.
Hi. Sorry. Question. You kind of answered this. I'm guessing you don't, like, approve of all things that come your way, like the new Spider-Man movie. You said you didn't see the outfit and stuff. Have you ever, like, seen anything, like... that you're like, wow, I made that, and that's completely taken out of context, or something like that. Like, I know I see shows all the time on, like, the Disney Channel or Cartoon Network, and I'm like, Thor is not what? Like, I don't know, it's...
Well, a couple of times. In the Fantastic Four movie, they did Dr. Doom in a way that I had not really envisioned him. And as I mentioned, I didn't envision the Hulk or the Sandman being that big.
But aside from that, I mean, I think that Marvel has been very faithful to the comics and the movies they've done, more faithful than I would have guessed they would have been able to be. And so, no, I have no problems with the movies. I love them. And I think most of the people love them. And wait till you see the new ones.
What is the one question that you've been hoping to be asked but haven't been asked?
Is it time to quit yet? No, I'm only kidding. I don't really hope to be asked any questions. I usually hope people won't ask me any questions so I can get my work done. Some of the work that I had a hand in doing was well received. I love to see how the comic book business that I spent so many years in has become so important to so many people and how it's branched out into the movies and television and video games. And the enthusiasm of the fans that you catch when you come to a convention is such a beautiful thing, and that I just keep wanting to come, and I don't have that much time, but whenever I can, I love coming here, I love talking to people like you, and I love seeing how interested you are, and in today's world, with so many rotten things taking place, it's nice to know there's something that can bring people together that they enjoy, and they enjoy talking about and dealing with, and so it's just a good feeling. Some people take vacations, I go to comic book cons.
We're gonna take one more question. It's gonna be right here, man in the hat, and we're gonna cheer on Stan for 10 minutes straight after that. All right.
Yeah, along with Jack Kirby, the best run on the Fantastic Four in my life. What's your favorite run on your run on the Fantastic Four?
I think maybe the Galactus Silver Surfer one. And the reason is, when I used to lecture at colleges, very often they would ask me questions, and inevitably one question would be, tell us about the Galactus Trilogy. And I love the sound of that. It's like, tell us about the Harvard Classics or about War and Peace. So, yeah,
okay, well, everybody, I want to thank Stan for coming out.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek. classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.